Welcome to Political Hitman. My name is Howie Silberger, and we are right here on Israel News Talk Radio, the only radio station that I want to be on. Israel News Talk Radio is the place to be. IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. You could reach me if you want to send me an email. You could send me an email, Howie@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and I'll get your email and we'll be able to talk. The idea that we should celebrate the assassinations, the killings, the elimination of two major terrorists this week is kind of repulsive to me. And let me explain to you why. It's not that I'm happy that I wouldn't be happy if they were still alive. I'm very happy that they're no longer amongst the living. I'm very happy that they're no longer able to hurt people, to kill people, to arrange for terror attacks on people. But at the same time, I understand that taking out two known leaders leaves us with the void, the vacuum of power, which will allow other, maybe even more radical people to rise the ranks and take over the leadership of these terror groups, and thus commit more and more severe terror attacks against the Israeli people and the Jewish people abroad. And this is what worries me more than the lives of these two monsters. I won't even dignify them with using their names. These two monsters that ran these terror organizations that murdered innocent men, women, and children. The world has been fairly quiet when it comes to attacks on Jews. And we've seen many attacks on Jews and Jewish targets in the last couple of weeks, particularly in Europe and North America, also in Israel. It seems like the world doesn't seem to care about indiscriminate attacks on innocent men, women, and children. An attack, a drone attack on a soccer field, which killed 12 or 13 Druze kids, that's went unnoticed by world media. Nobody seemed to care that a group of kids, ages 12, even younger than 12, I think some of them were 10 to 16, were murdered on a soccer field playing soccer by a drone attack, by a rocket attack. No one seems to care about that around the world. World media for sure not. There was no outrage, no pundits yelling on television that this is unacceptable, the murder of children is unacceptable. Nobody on the side that's been yelling at Israel that they're killing children in Gaza seemed to care that these Druze children were killed. I haven't seen one political pundit, not one, get up and scream about the murder of these people on a talk show. I haven't seen it at all. And it makes me wonder why the indifference to the murder of children by Hezbollah or whoever launched the missiles by Iran, and the unfortunate collateral damage that some children have died in Israel's operation in Gaza. Why is there a moral difference? I don't understand the difference morally between children dying on one end and children dying on the other end. If you're going to be outraged by children dying, shouldn't you be outraged by all children dying? If you're going to be outraged by innocent men, women, and children, as they claim, being attacked indiscriminately, shouldn't you be outraged by men, women, and children being attacked indiscriminately by bombs and rockets? Where was the outrage when thousands of missiles went raining into southern Israel for over a decade, almost two decades? Where is the outrage for that? And yet, we continuously hear and see pundits get on and scream and yell, and activists and people in the streets screaming and yelling that Israel's committing a genocide against children of Gaza. But they completely ignore the attacks on children outside of Gaza. They don't care about anybody else. They don't care about children. And it leads me to believe that the protests, and this is not the only thing that leads me to believe that, but let's go with this for today, leads me to believe that the protests on the streets supporting the destruction of the state of Israel and supporting Hamas has nothing really to do with children or outrage over the war. Has to do with the desire and the will of people who want to destroy Israel. This is it. This is all it has to do with. It has to do with destruction of Israel. Rashida Tlaib, the congresswoman who is anti-Israel, she did not condemn the strike which killed these children playing soccer, this Druze strike, but she did manage to condemn Israel's strike on terrorist leaders. That she managed to condemn, because we could condemn Israel. This is what we do. We condemn Israel. But if Jews weren't involved in the massacre, then why condemn it? Arabs killing Arabs is okay. It's like blacks killing blacks in the States. That seems to be okay. But if a white kills a black, ooh, there's riots in the street. So the double standard of this whole thing is actually infuriating. So the Olympics have started in Paris this past week. And we see in the Paris Olympics something really telling that's been happening. The Israeli teams that have been competing in the Olympics have faced unbelievable discrimination. And the Olympic Organizing Committee doesn't even care. So the judo guy didn't want to shake, one judo guy didn't want to shake the other judo guy's hand because the Israeli guy's hand was not worth being shaken. The teams are being booed as they're getting up to compete. And in one case, when the soccer team got out on the field to play, the Israeli soccer team, there were chants coming from the crowd yelling, Heil Hitler. Now, the last time the Olympics had chants yelling, Heil Hitler, was in the 1930s Olympics when it was held in Berlin under the tutelage of Adolf Hitler. And so people yelling Heil Hitler at the Israeli team competing in the Olympics makes me wonder if the chief rabbi of France, who advised all Jews to leave France immediately, if he wasn't wrong. When the sentiment gets to the point where average person who goes to watch a sporting event could freely yell Heil Hitler and not feel any tinge of guilt or remorse or fear about yelling Heil Hitler, we've come to the realization as Jews, we should have come to the realization that maybe France isn't a place for Jews. And when you look around the world and you see what's going on, attacks on Jews in New York, attacks on Jews in New Jersey, attacks on Jews in Canada. There were 5 attacks on Jewish places in Canada in the last week. School bus burnings to attacks on a synagogue to attacks on a Jewish day school. And of course, graffiti scrawled all over the place from Free Palestine to We Are Hamas to Hamas is coming to get you. One has to wonder why people are still choosing not to move to Israel, why people are still choosing to live in a dangerous environment. This is a question that continues to be asked. Now, some people who live in the diaspora will argue that they are there to try to convince other people to move to Israel, and somebody has to be there to scream and yell and to let people know that there's a problem. But it's starting to become really evident that there is an issue with Jew hatred in the world. And once it starts, and once it starts growing, and it's contagious, and once it starts growing, it is very difficult to quell it. We are primed right now. The world is primed right now, and I hate to say this, the world is primed right now for a charismatic leader who is a Jew hater to get up and start a Holocaust. This can happen in almost any country in the world that has Jews today. We are at the point where Jew hatred is at a point where we can definitively say, I could definitively say, that I will not be surprised if a war against the Jews, it's already starting, if a war against the Jews doesn't escalate to the point of another genocide. And how scary it is to say that, and I don't like saying things like this, and I really, really can't stand the fact that we're at this point. But we're there. And I never thought we'd be there in my lifetime, for sure not. We're not even 100 years removed from a Holocaust against the Jews. And suddenly you have a stadium full of people yelling Heil Hitler at a Jewish team during an international sporting event. It seems to me that we have a major issue. It's a major problem. And we can't blame this problem, and I would not blame this problem, on the war against Gaza. This is not a problem with the war against Hamas. This is the, it wasn't even the catalyst, it was the excuse. I like to use the example of the Second Intifada in 2000, where Yasser Arafat claimed that, well, not Yasser Arafat, but people claimed that the Intifada started because Ariel Sharon, the then Prime Minister of the State of Israel, visited the Temple Mount. And that inflamed the people, and that's when the Second Intifada started. And that was the story that the Arabs tried to sell to the world. Until Yasser Arafat, who was truthful, and he always told the truth in Arabic, not so much in English, but in Arabic he always told the truth. And he was truthful to his people, and he said, no, this was pre-planned, and this was planned out, and we're just looking for an excuse to start the war. And so, yes, so Ariel Sharon going to the Temple Mount was an excuse. We were able to inflame people, get people riled up. And because we were able to inflame and rile up people, they went out and they started this intifada. At least he was honest. So I wish the people who hate Jews would just be honest and say, we're Jew haters. We do not like the Jewish people. And therefore, we are fighting against the Jewish people. But it might be a little more than that, too. And we have to start thinking that maybe there's a little more to the story than just Jew hatred. Because Jew hatred's always existed. It's existed for centuries. And we know that in all countries where Jews are living relatively peacefully with their non-Jewish neighbors, this bubbling hatred of Jews is just under the surface. And it's always there bubbling. It's always there just bubbling away, just simmering until something happens and it spikes and then it disappears again and back underground, just kind of simmers until it spikes again. So we know this is the trend, and this has been the trend for centuries. And when it does spike, it usually gets bad and Jews end up dying. We know this. But we're at a point where it's not simmering anymore, now it's boiling. And when it boils, that is where Jews run into problems. But let's look at it a different way. Let's look at this a different way. The governments in the countries outside of Israel that have Jew hatred problems right now, America, Canada, France, Belgium, Germany's not so much, Poland not at all. But the countries that do have problems with people hating Jews, these are the countries that allowed thousands of people to get into the street and yell, we are Hamas, the Germans didn't do enough, gas the Jews, and globalize the Intifada. Now, I'm going to ignore the other rhetoric because it's just dumb and self-evident that they hate Jews and they just want to kill Jews. So we'll ignore all that. I want to focus right now on globalizing the Intifada. So when we hear the words globalized Intifada, as Jews, we understand what that means. I'm not so sure that non-Jews understand what that means, but as Jews, we understand very clearly that globalizing the Intifada is calling for the massacre of Jews around the world. This is extremely clear because the Intifada itself, both of them, were uprisings to destroy the Jewish state and destroy the Jewish state through terror attacks on innocent civilians. This was the goal of the Intifada. This was the purpose of the Intifada. And this is how the Intifada was carried out. Bus bombings, shootings, stabbing children in schoolyards. This was all part of the Intifada. And the Intifada that we all clearly remember as Jews, we don't forget people who come and kill us. And we don't forget people who pose a threat to kill us. And these were clearly parts of the Intifada, major parts of the Intifada. In fact, the only parts of the Intifada that really mattered. And so understanding the term globalized Intifada is extremely important, particularly in countries that have never experienced an Intifada. Understanding the term globalized Intifada in the context of we are Hamas has to be even more clearly laid out for the people of these countries that don't understand the political and the sociological and the religious context of this battle. So if you look at the Hamas charter, and this is something everybody should do, you should just take time, Google it, look up the original Hamas charter, look up the changes to the charter, ignore the changes because the original one is the one that they want and the one that they follow. And understand that when Hamas says at the beginning of their charter, in the first two clauses of their charter, when they lay out that Jews are the target, and not only Jews who are part of the Zionist entity, part of Israel, not only those Jews, but all Jews around the world are the target. And they clearly lay it out in the first couple of clauses of their charter that Israel is the goal. The goal is to destroy Israel. And the secondary goal, which is probably also the primary goal, the co-goal, we'll call it, the joint goal, is the destruction of Jews everywhere. The destruction of Jews everywhere, killing Jews everywhere. That is their goal. And they use a hadith from the Quran to back up that goal. And they quote it. They quote it extensively in the charter, where they say that, you know, a Jew could go and hide somewhere. They could hide behind a rock, and the rock will call out to the prophet, "There is a Jew behind me, come and kill it." The Jew could hide behind a tree, and the tree will call out, "Hey, there's a Jew behind me, come and kill it." Not an Israeli, not a Zionist, not a infidel, not a usurper, not a God denier, but a Jew. Anywhere a Jew hides, doesn't matter where they are, that nation will call out, that place will call out and say, "Hey, there's a Jew here, come and kill it." And the Muslims' obligation is to go and kill the Jew. This is what the Hamas charter says. It is very clear in what it says. It is undeniable in what it says. And as long as the world leaders, as long as the world doesn't want to take it seriously and doesn't want to read it and understand exactly what Hamas's goal is, Jews in the world outside of Israel, even Jews in Israel to a certain extent, are in grave danger because they laid out their plan. And this has been an issue from the beginning. That when the enemy tells us exactly what they want to do, and the Arabs have always been honest, exactly what they want to do. Nasser said very clearly, throw the Jews into the sea. Arafat said very clearly, look, the Oslo Accords were the first step in our multi-step plan to liberate all of Palestine. That this is a farce. I'm going to sign this, but it's not real. This is what he told his people. If we listen to what the leadership says and we take them for their words, where there's no reason to actually deny their words, no reason to actually actually not believe them. Why would we not believe our enemy when our enemy tells us they want to kill us? It doesn't make sense not to believe the enemy. So if we actually listen to their words and we actually take their words seriously, then we should know that Hamas is the main threat. And therefore, anybody who's standing on the street in North America, in Europe, anywhere else in the world, and yells, "I am Hamas," they should be immediately arrested and charged with being part of a terrorist organization, being part of an organization that wants to commit a genocide against Jewish people. And if you think Jews are the only ones, they're not. Anyone who doesn't believe in Islam is a target. So they'll start with the Jews, but then they're going to move on to other people who don't believe in Islam. Because if you're an infidel, you're an infidel. And if you're an infidel, you must be destroyed. Which is the exact same reason why there will never, ever be an agreement or a deal or a peace accord that works in the Middle East between Israel and a Muslim state. It's impossible. Because the Quran clearly says that any land that has ever been occupied or had a caliphate on that land is Muslim land forever. And any government that sets up there that's not a Muslim government is setting up a government on non-Muslim land, which is not permitted. And thus, because it's not permitted, those people are infidels and must be destroyed. So there you go. It's the Middle East crisis. And I wouldn't call it a crisis because it's extremely clear that crisis is a situation that's not so clear. That one side believes one thing, one side believes another thing. There's a crisis. They don't understand each other. This is extremely clear. It's been clear cut for the last 100 years. It's going to be clear cut for the next 100 years. It's just that people just don't want to accept it. That's really what it comes down to. People don't accept the fact that it's a religious war, not a land war. That it's irrelevant whose land it is. It's irrelevant who legally owns the land. According to international law, nobody cares. It's irrelevant on how the land was attained. The only relevant part of this whole mix-up, this whole mishkababble, the only relevant part of it is that Israel has a country that has been, that's on land that was a caliphate, and they are usurpers, and they have to be destroyed. That is Islamic law. That is the only relevant point in this. And Israel's not the only victim to this law. It's what happened in Lebanon. This is why the Muslims took over Lebanon, why the Christian government of Lebanon was destroyed. And the Christians have been persecuted in Lebanon. Nobody seems to care about that either. But the Christians were persecuted in Lebanon. The exact same reason. The Ottoman Empire had Lebanon too. And because it had Lebanon, it was a Muslim caliphate. And when a Christian government took over after World War II, the Muslims said, no way. We can't allow that to happen. And therefore, we have to fight to liberate Muslim land. So the Christians, the Druze, the Israelis, they're all legitimate targets. And this is where we're at today. Hamas demanding that we globalize the Intifada and attack Jews around the world. And we're starting to see the results of that globalization of the Intifada right around the world. Everywhere there's an attack on the Jewish population today, anywhere you see that, that is globalizing the Intifada. And if anyone wants to tell you that this is about Israel, it's not about Israel. It's about destroying Jews. Because burning buses in Toronto, or bombing a supermarket in New York, or defacing a synagogue in Chicago will not help liberate any land in the Middle East. Invoking fear upon Jews of Europe, attacking Jews in the street of France, attacking Jews in London, attacking Jews in Germany, is not going to liberate any land that you want to liberate in the Middle East. It's not even going to help one iota in the liberation of this land. It's not going to help at all. Invoking fear in the Jewish community outside of Israel is not going to liberate anything. It's just going to invoke fear upon people. It's just going to put innocent people in harm's way for nothing, because there's no end goal. The end goal is only on the aggressor side, and the end goal is the immediate destruction of the Jewish people. That's the end goal. And we have to understand this. This is something that has to be understood. And the second we understand it, the second we have that kind of clarity, where that is an understood factor, that this is true, that this is the understood truth, then we could move on. Then we could say, oh, now I understand where my enemy stands. Now I understand the concept. And because I understand the concept, now I know how to fight it. So I can't fight it militarily. I mean, I'll have to fight it militarily, but really, diplomatically, there's no fight here. Because they'll agree to anything as long as it eases their goal of destroying the Jewish people. So they'll agree to any peace treaty. They'll agree to any ceasefire. They'll agree to anything that you want them to agree to. Well, we'll just sign the papers. No problem. We don't really mean it. As the cultural phenomenon is, we'll just sign it with one eye closed and make people believe that we believe it. But in reality, we know where our end goal is. We know what our goal is. And for heaven's sake, their goal is stated in all their literature. Their goal is stated in all their paraphernalia, in their necklaces, in their patches, and everything else. If you look at Palestine and what they claim is Palestine, it is the entire state of Israel. And interestingly enough, if you take a closer look, it's the entire state of Israel, minus Gaza and a Judean Samaria, sometimes is included. So they even take out the areas that they, in their paraphernalia, they even take out the areas that they already sort of control. So the only area that they call Palestine is the area that is currently Israel. And when they say from the river to the sea, although most people yelling from the river to the sea have no clue which river, which sea they're talking about, the truth is they're talking about the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, which means that it's the entire state of Israel. This is what they want to liberate. This is what they're fighting for. So standing on the street in New York or standing on the street in Paris or standing on the street in Dresden is not going to liberate anything in Israel. It's not going to liberate Palestine for them. But it's going to cause fear. It's going to cause misunderstanding. It's going to cause hatred in the rest of the world. And that's the goal. Drive the Jews from Israel, then drive the Jews from the world. It's the same goal Hitler had. And it's not all that surprising, because if you understand the history of radical Islam in the Middle East, you understand that one of the original radical Islamic leaders, Haj Amin al-Husseini, was an aide to Hitler. He went to Croatia to help organize the slaughter of Jews in Croatia. He worked for the Nazis. And then he went back to the Mandate of Palestine, the British Mandate of Palestine, and he trained the Arab armies to fight against the Jews that were coming into to Israel, that were coming into the land. He trained them in the ways of Hitler, in the ways of Nazism, because this is what he knew. This is how he was trained. So if you take a look at how they line up, how they march, the goose-stepping and the salutes and everything else, it's very reminiscent of the Nazi army in Germany. And that's done intentionally. And their philosophy and their goals, they're all coincide with Nazism. The Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, even the PLO are the modern-day Nazi party. These are the people who want to destroy the Jewish nation. These are the people whose sole goal it is to destroy the Jewish nation. We tend to forget that before 1963, the concept of Palestinian Arabs did not exist. Before 1963, they were just Arabs and Jews. After 1963 and the creation of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, when an Egyptian was chosen, Yasser Arafat, was chosen by the Muslim Brotherhood to create an organization to destroy Israel because they realized after 1956 that militarily, attacking Israel externally, militarily, wasn't working. So let's weaken Israel internally by committing terrorism within the country. And therefore, when they're weakened internally and they're worried about defending internal threats, they won't be noticing external threats so that we could come externally and we could destroy them. And Yasser Arafat did an amazing job building up his organization and creating these Palestinian people that never existed before 1963. There's no history of Palestinian people. They only exist because Yasser Arafat created them in 1963 with the aid of the Muslim Brotherhood. This is why they exist, and this is the sole reason they exist. So understanding that and knowing that we are in a situation where the Muslim Brotherhood is running the show, and the show is destroying Israel and destroying the Jewish people, how do we defend ourselves? Knowing this, what do we do to defend ourselves? What do we do to save the Jewish people? There's a few things we can do. Some of them are stuff that we could do ourselves, some of the stuff that we have to rely on our communities to do, and some of the stuff we have to rely on Israel. So Israel could loosen the paperwork. They could loosen up the paperwork to allow people to move to Israel a little easier. This is something Israel could do, allowing people in countries that are dangerous. And I would say that most of the countries in the world today are pretty dangerous for Jews. Israel could loosen up some of the paperwork and it'll make it a little easier for Jews in the diaspora to move back to Israel. Israel could welcome them and create towns and cities for people in the diaspora and provide affordable housing for people who can't afford to purchase a house. And with the mass influx of Jews coming from North America and coming from Europe, there'll be plenty of professionals, teachers and doctors and whatever else, plenty of professionals that could service these communities. And this is what should happen. In the diaspora, Jews that decide to stay in the diaspora, and there were Jews that decided to stay in Nazi Germany too, and Jews that decided to stay in occupied Europe at the time of the Holocaust, and there were Jews that decided to stay in Egypt after slavery too. I mean, this is what happens, right? So the Jews that decide to stay, and your organizations have to start really looking at how to make the Jewish community safer. And I'm not saying build more infrastructure and build more moats and build more and get more metal detectors and more guards in front of buildings, because we all know that's all show and tell. If a terrorist wants to go and attack a building, we've seen it and we saw it happen 5 times this week. If a terrorist wants to go and attack a building, they're going to attack the building whether there's a camera up or not. They don't really care about cameras. They don't really care about security guards. And they don't really care about metal detectors. If there's going to be an attack, there's going to be an attack, and they're going to attack it, and that's it. So knowing that, the only thing the Jewish community should be focused on in North America today is self-defense. Because the only way Jews are going to be able to defend themselves when they are attacked, the only way Jews are going to be able to defend their communities when they are attacked, the only way Jews are going to be able to defend anything when they're attacked is through learning self-defense. Every Jewish community in the world should incorporate into their school curriculums and should incorporate into their communities free self-defense courses paid for by the community. You raise billions of dollars, use it to defend the Jewish people. And I'm not saying make the security companies rich. I'm saying use it practically. Allow Jews to defend themselves. And encouraging Jews from 2 years old to 200 years old to defend themselves and encouraging them to learn how to defend themselves will make the Jewish community stronger in North America. Will it avert disaster? I can't guarantee that. There's no guarantees to averting disaster. Nobody could promise that we won't be attacked. Nobody could promise that we won't be killed. But it will mitigate the threat. And that's what we're looking at doing. We're looking at mitigating the threat. If a bully comes to you in the schoolyard and bullies you, and you're meekly sitting in a corner crying, that bully's going to come back every day. If a bully comes in the schoolyard and starts bullying you, and you punch him back really hard, that bully's going to walk away and go find somebody else to bother. That's what has to be done. Now, will the communities do it? Probably not. But the suggestion's there. And that's really all that needs to be done. All that needs to be done is to teach Jews self-defense and encourage them at the same time to go home. I'm Howie Silberger's Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Thank you for joining me. I'll see you again next show right here on Israel News Talk Radio. Don't forget to check out the website, israelnewstalkradio.com. And if you want to reach me for anything at all, Howie@israelnewstalkradio.com. See you next time.